everyone, and welcome to another episode of Upzoned, where every week we take just one big story from the week in the news that touches the Strongtown's conversation, and we upzone it. I'm Kia, and I am back this week, finally at long last, with Chuck Marone, returned from his travels. How are you doing, Chuck?
Fantastic. It has been a while, hasn't it?
I know, it's weird. I feel like, I mean, I've talked to you a lot, but we haven't talked to the Upzoned audience very much. So it's pretty exciting to have you back to talk about what I think is a pretty universal and certainly very timely for the Strongtowns movement conversation. I have an article today that marries two things that we are talking about a lot, especially today at Strongtowns, which is Southern California and parking. We are going to Southern California next week for our SoCal regional gathering. This is airing on, let's see, Black Friday, if you will, November 29th. And we are going to be getting on a plane to LA on Monday, the exact Monday after, to talk about how the Southern California region can use the Strongtowns approach to get a lot more financially prosperous. And we're talking real financial prosperity. And of course, a big part of that is parking, changing their approach to parking, which, haven't you heard, is not so great. There is a podcast out that just came out a few days ago from KCRW's Greater LA show, which is entitled The Parking Dilemma and LA's Future. Chuck, you've spent a whole lot of time in, you know, for instance, Anaheim. What's been your experience of parking in LA, and how do they fit into this Black Friday parking conversation, which is our other big topic that certainly our audience will be talking about today?
It's so interesting to me listening to that podcast, just the amount of energy, like just like sheer raw will that has been put into creating adequate amount of parking in California. And I mean, just auto infrastructure in general. Most of California, from a land use geographic standpoint, was developed post-World War II. It was developed in the automobile era. And so everything has kind of been designed, you know, with that in mind. And so parking has just kind of been integrated into everything as a kind of fait accompli. It's not been, as it was in my city here, kind of retrofitted after the fact, where we ripped down lots of stuff and then built things. It's been built as you went. And kind of the remarkable thing about that is, you know, in places like mine, the further east you go, there's this idea that, well, if we just had known in advance, we could have planned this out and parking wouldn't be so expensive to provide. And we wouldn't have to spend all this money building ramps and garages and everything else. But you go to California, where they did have that advanced knowledge, and they in fact built everything around it, and they have even greater problems. Their struggles financially with providing this stuff, with making it work within the environment they've created. And then on top of it, I think this growing awareness that the environments that they built now around this, you know, base car storage infrastructure is just not very nice to live in. You realize that, well, maybe the problem isn't that we didn't plan it or didn't have enough capacity to, ahead of time to do it. Maybe it's just the wrong model.
You know, it's a really good question. And one that KCRW brings up, I thought in an interesting way, was they ask, like, who's the author of this model? Who's like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain who said mandatory parking minimums are a thing that we should have? And two, here is what they are. I was curious to hear your answer to that question, Chuck. It seems like in LA, because the city really developed in tandem with the car, it grew with the car way more so than a lot of cities further to the east, certainly, that had strong bones and strong infrastructure and a strong identity prior to the advent of the automobile. But I wanted to ask you, where did parking minimums come from in LA and otherwise? What's your sort of like smart expert person take on this?
There's a part of me that would like to like blame the planners, right? I mean, I'm one of them, but I, you know, to me, I just, you know, picture like the bureaucrat sitting in the room going, let me plan ahead for every possible scenario. And, oh, I, you know, this community over here is far thinking and they have adopted these standards and let's make sure this is done. I think that would be an oversimplification and actually probably unfair to the planning profession. I do think that, and I kind of ascribe to Jim Kunstler's view of this, which I actually think is like a generous view of the past, which is to say, this just seemed like a really good idea. it wasn't something that people had to force down people's throat. I mean, certainly there was opposition to it, but the opposition was kind of steamrolled in this idea of progress. You know, I'm a big Disney fan. I really love the theme parks and the kind of the urban design techniques that they have used to build them out. One of the other parts of Disney was just this embrace of the notion of progress. They had, you know, this idea of Progress City and, you know, the whole kind of 50s experience and really early 60s experience was catalyzed around this idea of progress. Plastics, automobiles, parking garages, dishwashers and appliances, and just all these modern conveniences. It was this like wonder time. The stuff that we marvel at with smartphone technology and the internet and satellites and all this, their period of time was galvanized around this recreation of a new version of human habitat, a new way for us to live. And so I know that planners were the bean counters who pushed this ahead technically. They could not have done it because planners are really impotent to do anything without broad public support. And they certainly had that from industry leaders to, you know, the local leaders like the head of the Rotary Club and the Chamber of Commerce president and all this, to land speculators and developers, to the general public. People saw this as, this is what smart, progressive, thoughtful people do. Let's go do this. And so California was this land of opportunity, this land of, you know, it was like the next great American frontier, largely because they could do all this stuff at scale without the encumbrances that you had in like an Eastern city where everything had been built out for hundreds of years. You had this wide open landscape where you could just go build it all kind of perfectly up front. And the dichotomy of it now, of course, is that because this grand experiment like is a failure on many, many levels, California now struggles more deeply than anyone else to try to reconcile an environment designed for people in the automobile, but not really designed for humans. You hear that in this KCRW clip, just how visceral that is.
It's pretty powerful. I mean, I like what you're saying about how sort of collectively as a culture, we created parking minimums. It wasn't just like, yes, obviously the policy was created by planners and people with access to those documents, but there is demand for this stuff. And one of the things that I found really interesting about this podcast was that it talks about, you know, on Black Friday parking as part of our campaign, we talk about the excess of parking in the retail sphere specifically, because it is very impactful to go out shopping on Black Friday, supposedly the biggest shopping day of the year, and see dozens, if not hundreds sometimes, of empty spots along the outer rings of the mall. And then you realize that when people say, you know, there's not enough parking in this town, what they really mean is there isn't enough parking immediately outside of my destination because like the laws of space and time apply, you know. But KCRW brings up this interesting point about housing and parking. And one of the things that they asked their listeners towards the end of the podcast was, would you rent an apartment that didn't include a reserved parking space for you? And they got a resounding no. How does the parking minimums conversation apply when you talk about housing, especially in denser apartment focused, like big cities like LA?
Right. I'll just say it really doesn't in some ways. I mean, you could, and this is some of the pushback we often get, you know, well, you can get rid of parking minimums and Walmart's still going to build their massive lot. You get rid of parking minimums and the condo developer with all the capital in LA is still going to build this massive structure with a ton of parking. And, you know, so what have you really accomplished? I think that's looking at it in the wrong way, because both of those entities, the big, huge condo developer and the big box retailer, are also like byproducts of this larger system. They're really the manifestation or the end outcome of what you get with this top-down centralized capital system that only can fund these massive big projects. Part of our Strongtowns conversation, I mean, it's not just about parking. It's about building places differently. It's about responding to struggles that people have. It's about using the resources that we have committed to in a smarter, but also, you know, a higher return on investment kind of way. that goes beyond parking. If we look at a place like LA, and you know, we're, to kind of paraphrase Chris Arnotti, we're front row people who are worried about housing affordability on kind of the high end. We're worried about finding a place for both of our cars and being able to commute to work and having things be relatively congestion free or at least minimal congestion. Then yeah, this is not an applicable conversation to you. If you're someone in Santa Ana who would like to take one of those houses that is now listed as single family and make that into a duplex or a triplex, and the city's telling you, you know what, we got these mandatory parking minimums and you're going to have to buy the neighboring house and tear it down and make it into a parking lot if you want to be able to do this. Well, this is just self-defeating on many, many levels. I like the KCRW piece. It was very interesting. To me, it was very interesting from a front row standpoint. I don't think the most exciting growth opportunities in our communities, and I also don't think like the deepest struggles are in the front row. I think they're other places. Santa Ana is a great case study of what that is and what that looks like and what that means. I think the parking minimum conversation for all the people out there like, well, this is not relevant to me. Okay, yeah, I get it. Like, I understand. Your issue is how do we get more parking? You know, and I'm willing to pay for it. I just want more. Like, okay, you're on Team Strong Towns. But this parking minimum thing is a big deal for a lot of places, particularly the incremental developers and the people who are trying to make better use of the spaces that we built and are being held up by this.
Well, and I might also add that even if your place's struggle today is there's not enough parking, hi from St. Louis, Missouri, where we have had 2/3 population loss. I feel like I always have to beat that drum. That cities change. And in large part because we invested so much into parking in an era when there was peak demand for that parking, we saw our towns hollow out. I think there's a real causal relationship between devoting tons of your street surfaces to either surface lots, like big tracts of asphalt that literally do nothing, or even like in this KCRW piece, they talk a lot about parking podiums, which are, I say kind of jokingly, mixed use buildings where the like lower two levels are parking garages, the lower like few levels are parking garages. And then above that, you have some other stuff. But in the process of doing that, we eroded our streetscape in our core downtown and then in a lot of other parts of our like outer rings of downtown. We made St. Louis a less enjoyable place to live. We made it pretty much mandatory for you to have a car because our centers of business are really spread out so that, you know, the single mom who rents an apartment from me has to drive 40 minutes to get to a place that will employ her because there just aren't as many employment centers on this highly developed land, but it's all been developed for the stupidest use in the world. So
take that in your, where you're from in St. Louis and magnify it by, you know, 50 and you've got LA. I'm sympathetic to the notion. I mean, you, as an analogy and, you know, trigger warning, bad Chuck all analogy. Right. If you have someone who's like smoked all their life and they're in their 80s and 90s, I've heard of doctors who have said, you know, like, yeah, don't stop smoking. Like at this point, it hasn't killed you yet. The pain of like going down that route of withdrawal is going to be more for you at your age than what you've got. I look at like California and I'm like, you've invested, you've built this entire thing around this theory of the automobile. You're kind of all in on it. And if you can't experience the little bit of pain that comes from paying ridiculous amounts for parking or, you know, driving around to try to find parking, you know, having like a scarcity of parking, how are you going to make the transformation to something that's actually viable? Like, I don't know. And the only advice that I have for California, really, when it comes to this, is to start in the places that are actually working. And one of the reasons we chose Santa Ana to do this gathering is Santa Ana is actually a place that, you know, despite the poverty, despite some of the struggles that they have on paper, is actually working in many beautiful ways. Well, LA is an exciting place and there's a ton going on there. I think that the lessons for California come more from the places like Santa Ana than, you know, switching from one top-down mega project approach to another top-down mega project approach in a city like Los Angeles.
I think that's a really good point. And I feel compelled to offer an apology to St. Louis for me just saying like we're all like paved over hell and no one wants to live here. That's not true. What I meant is a lot of it is that. I'm not going to apologize for that. But we do have neighborhoods like the one that I feel really fortunate every day to live in that – are maintain their traditional bones and have built on them in small surgical ways over the years. And I totally think you're right, Chuck, that when we talk about ending parking minimums, that's one tool in a larger strong towns approach that should be employed on a neighborhood level. And you do a little bit of triage and you talk about like that urban acupuncture concept of like, where could I have the biggest effect on the whole by making a little shift in the part? And by the way, I'm human and I might not get it right the first time. So I'm going to try a reversible solution. You know, I'm going to try something incremental. I'm going to try something that is going to adapt to the needs of my residents because fortunes change. Like St. Louis used to be LA in a lot of ways. St. Louis used to be comparable in industry to New York and Chicago and all of these big cities. I don't know what's going to happen in LA over the course of the next years, but I would love to see more Santa Anas in LA now because they're the ones that are going to be resilient over time.
Well, I feel like what you're talking about, you know, when you point out the population loss in St. Louis, the people in California say, well, it will never happen to us. Like we're projecting gazillions and gazillions of people indefinitely. And so like, I get that, you know, growth in population allows you to be really sloppy in other areas and kind of make up for those mistakes in the short term, because it kind of bails you out. I feel like the lesson to be learned from St. Louis in terms of, you know, the auto oriented parts that were done in the way you describe is the lack of adaptability. I mean, the fact that these are places not easily evolved into a more productive use. That's the entire state of California. The entire state of California is built in a way that assumed genius right off the front and assumed, you know, that like we knew what we were doing and things will never have to differ from what we are building now. And of course, we're experiencing all kinds of stress with that and needs to retrofit and change and adapt and morph. And California is just not designed to do that. And so you see these kind of crazy, half-baked, really expensive, not quite working solutions that are thrown against the wall to try to make it all kind of work together. And it's becoming increasingly more dysfunctional, just like some of the parts of St. Louis that are very difficult to retrofit.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know, man, I feel like I'm not convinced that LA needs to end parking minimums, visit strongtowns.org/SoCal. We would love to talk to you about it in person at our gathering in Santa Ana next week. It all starts on December 4th. And also, while you're at it, check out the app.
This is going to be awesome.
It's going to be so good.
No,
I'm so excited.
Yeah, no, I looked at again because I've been traveling so much and you all been handling this like really well. I looked at the agenda again. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like, I'm like, this is really going to be fun. Yeah. So
both Chuck and I will be there along with a few other Strong Towns faces that you might know and a really all-star cast of cool people doing cool things all across Southern California. And I'm including in that the presenters and the attendees. You don't want to miss it. And while you're there, why don't you check out Black Friday Parking, the hashtag on social media, as well as all over our site. We are going to be talking about parking across the continental U.S. and cities that really you do struggle to find a parking space on Black Friday. They're the rarity. I'm just going to say that. They're the exception to the rule, but we're going to be talking about them too. And I think that you won't want to miss it. It's going to be cool. All right. Transition time. Chuck, it is time for the down zone. I want to hear what you have been listening to, watching, reading as you gear up for, I know, your favorite time of year, the holiday season. I know you've been listening to some Christmas music, but what else has been on your media hit list?
I have been like getting ready to do some baking. So I save all my fiction for the end of the year when I'm baking. So I've got this long list, but I'm still going through. I think the last time I said I was listening to The Fall of Heaven, that book about the final days of the Shah in Iran. I've been losing momentum when I've been traveling because instead of traveling alone, I've been traveling with teammates. So like Jacob was with me last week and I wind up not spending hours and hours and hours listening to audiobooks while I'm, you know, traveling. I wind up talking to interesting people like Jacob. So I'm still on that book. I'm getting towards the end. It is very good. I see why Malcolm Gladwell recommended it. It's a very good book. But after that, I think I'm going to transition to my fiction and start the holiday baking.
Okay, well, send Chuck your recommendations for what to make while he's making kremakaka and all that good stuff. That's a Norwegian cookie, just to be clear, for people not in the Midwestern know. I have been watching a lot of movies lately because that's what I like to do when the weather gets cold, is just go to the movies again and again and again. So my Down Zone submission this week, I want to talk about the movie Parasite by Bong Joon-ho, the Korean director. Have you heard of it, Chuck?
No.
Okay. Well, he's the guy who did the movie Snowpiercer, which was the one about, it's like the end times and all of humanity has to be like on this single high-speed train that's like going around the equator of the Earth forever because that's all that's left of the planet. There's been an environmental apocalypse. It's a crazy movie and I loved it so much. I fell in love with this director's work and we'll see everything he does for the rest of my life. But Parasite is, at least it starts off as a much more grounded movie. It's about a family in South Korea, where the director is also from, who is very poor. They're living in a basement apartment, or like a semi-basement apartment, where they have this tiny little window that they can see out onto the street. And they concoct a scheme as a family to become the household staff for this much, much richer family in a mansion up the hill. And this is a Kia recommendation, so you can imagine some horror ensues. But it was really a really interesting and authentically surprising exploration of class in South Korea, and like how these two families like just live in their homes is really, really interesting. And the way that their neighborhoods work is so like stark and vivid and cool. So yeah, check out Parasite for some surprises if you are into some semi-horror-oriented drama this holiday season.
Okay, it's 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. It looks
so good.
Yeah, it looks, I'm looking at this now and I'm like, wow, okay, people love this movie.
Yeah, it's a shocking crossover hit. So yeah, give it a try. Even if you're just sort of like, I don't know if I really do like subtitled movies. Like, I think a lot of Americans would appreciate this for the way that it talks about the way our society has been stratified over economics. I think some Strong Towns folks will find some things to talk about with it.
I thought you were going to say you went to Ford versus Ferrari.
I haven't seen it. Oh, is it good?
Yeah, I went to it. It was, very like not Strong Towns-y movie, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, Matt Damon is great and Christian Bale is a lot of fun in this movie. They're both very good. So it was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing's more Strong Towns than a car race. I don't know. All right. That is what we've got for you this week. Thank you so much for listening into another episode of Upzoned. If you would like to support this show, you can become a Strong Towns member at strongtowns.org/membership. It's the end of the year, so it's a good time to make those tax deductible contributions. Your employer matches, all that good stuff. We have some really big things we're planning for next year. I just got done reading a giant proposal document that Chuck put together, and I cannot wait to tell you more about it in 2020. So I'll leave it at that. Become a member. Do it right now. Thank you so much, and keep doing what you can to be a strong town. Build a strong town would be better. Yeah, do that.